The Life of Duae El Moody. Chapter 29. Asking and Answering Questions. Mr. Moody was a born teacher. He was also a great learner. His capacity for drawing out information from people with whom he came in contact was marvelous. If driving about a new place, he never rested till he found out all he could about the country and the people, especially their spiritual condition. If with the minister, he would have the best that that man could give him regarding the passages of scriptures which were especially in his mind at the time. Early in his public speaking, he would gather around him Bible teachers, evangelists, and pastors, secure their best thoughts on some subject upon which he was to speak, and then go directly from such a conference to a meeting to deliver a heart-searching sermon, the actual material for which he had secured from his friends, absorbed, and made his own. In answer to an inquiry how far a young man was at liberty to use another man's thoughts, he replied, "Always give due credit if you can, and if you can't, or if you don't want to mention a man's name, say, 'Someone has said.' Don't be afraid of using another man's thoughts. The chances are that the man you get it from read it in some other form. There is practically very little that is original, and it's better to give the best of others' thoughts than what is poor, even if it is original. In Sunday school conventions and Christian work, in revival meetings and conferences, and in the schools, he set apart times for answering questions. Sometimes he would sit on the platform and put a leading clergyman in the witness box and question him steadily for an hour to the great edification and spiritual refreshment of the audience. Again, he would himself be the witness and let the audience try their hand at questioning. In order that the time might not be consumed with foolish questions or with those that were asked for the sake of discussion rather than profit, he insisted that they should be submitted in writing. Frequently, conferences were held at the close of each revival meeting where Christian workers could find out how to carry on evangelistic work in their own churches. The following practical questions and helpful answers illustrate this phase of his teaching. Question: what more can be done against intemperance? Answer: it would take all day to answer that. There are two sides on this matter, and I want to give a rap at both. I think every Christian church ought to be in a temperance society. Look at the men who are stumbling over this great evil, going down to a drunkard's grave. I am a total abstainer, have never touched liquor, and never intend to do so. I am able to do a day's work without it. Now for the other side, I think the temperance man makes a great mistake who always harps on that one question. Everything in its own place. If I go to prayer meeting, I don't want to hear incessantly about temperance or higher Christian life. We have a man in our city who comes to our prayer meetings every day, and it doesn't matter what our subject is, he always gets up and talks on the higher life. And so, with temperance, only when you get a chance for a word, slip it in. Give strong drink a rap. Question: how about temperance meetings Sunday evenings? Answer: I wouldn't have a temperance meeting on Sunday night. I would hold Sunday evening sacred to the preaching of the gospel of the Son of God. In the Bible, you have any quantity of subjects, but if you undertake to preach temperance sermons once a week, the people will get tired of it. The gospel covers temperance and everything else. A great many will not come to a temperance meeting, but they will come to a gospel meeting and may get temperance thrown in. Question: how can we make our prayer meetings more interesting? Answer: well, be more interesting yourself. That is one way. I have seen many meetings just murdered, the life taken out of them by the leader. There is a way of going into a meeting by which you may do this. Go in with your coat buttoned up, looking at no one. Do not use your natural voice and be as stiff as you can. Begin by saying you have nothing to say, and then talk for half an hour. If the meeting isn't dead then, I am a false prophet. Then get up and scold the people for not taking part after you have thrown the meeting open. For my own part, I don't know why we should go into church in that cold, formal way. When you go to church, why not take a man by the hand, throw off the stiffness, and make everybody feel at home? Question: if the pastor of a church does not favor evangelistic work, what can a layman do besides praying to promote the spiritual work? Answer: I should do a great deal more than pray. I believe the time has come for the layman to move, and by layman I mean men and women. If you can't work in the church, don't leave it, but go out and hold cottage meetings. If the country In the country, get the schoolhouse. That is a magnificent place to work. If the school board prohibits the use of the schoolhouse, hold meetings on a hilltop. That is what Christ did. Pray God to fill you with the Holy Ghost. Nothing can stop a man who is red hot and full of the Spirit of God. If we cannot get the people to come to church, let us go into their homes. I believe that a man or woman who is filled with the Spirit of God can gain access to the hearts of the people and can have conversions anywhere and everywhere. There is a class of people who don't believe in revivals and in what we call conversions. Don't quarrel with them, but go right to work and have conversions. A man who hides his talent under a napkin, and because his pastor is opposed to evangelistic meetings, goes to your life praying for his church once a week or once a month to ease his conscience, is on the wrong track. Question: would you advise a pastor to hold an evangelistic meeting every Sunday night? Answer: I would hold an evangelistic service 52 Sundays in the year. Sunday night is better than any other time because a great many never get out except on Sunday night. Working men and mechanics don't have any other time, and if you don't reach them Sunday night, you won't reach them at all. Most of the church audiences on Sunday morning are made up of Christian people, and that is the time when ministers ought to feed the flock and build up the church. If they are fed properly, all the members become preachers themselves, and instead of the minister having one meeting Sunday night, there will be 20. Within 5 miles of Round Top every Sunday night, we have 10 to 12 gospel meetings when we are in running order. I believe this can be done all throughout the United States. I heard of a minister who said to a judge in his congregation, "I am going out to the schoolhouse to preach. You have horses, and I want you to drive me out." The judge said that he would be very glad to do so. On the way, the minister said, "Judge, I am going to ask you to speak." "Oh," said the judge, "I couldn't do that." "But," said the minister, "I was in court the other day, and I never heard anything better than the charge you gave to the jury." The minister had some tact, and when he went on to the platform, he said, "Now I'm going to pray and read a portion of the scripture, and then I'm going to put the judge in the witness box and examine him." He asked the questions, and the judge preached the whole sermon. Our judges and our lawyers are spoiling for work. It wouldn't take long to evangelize this country if we could only get the pews into the pulpit, but the ministers can never do it alone. Question: would you have a stated after meeting every Sunday night? Answer: yes, every time I preach the gospel, I will look for results. There are three or four kinds of meetings. When we come around the Lord's table, that is worship. When we expound the Bible, that is to feed the church of God. But when we invite men to come to God, then we ought to expect that they will come right then and there. Question: how would you conduct an after meeting? Answer: I never would conduct it 52 Sundays alike. There are very few men who could do that successfully. If the sermon is over at 8:30, when the audience expects to stay until 9, they are in good mood to stay a half hour longer. There are two ways of inviting people to stay to an after meeting. One is to send them all home. The benediction is a polite invitation for people to go. I wouldn't pronounce any benediction at the first meeting, and I wouldn't say, if any are concerned about their soul, they are invited to stay. You stick an "if" 4 feet high before them, and it will take an earthquake to move them into an inquiry room. When I was converted, it took 3 months to screw up my courage to be examined by a committee to be taken into the church. You might as well try to get a man to go before a justice of the peace. I would say, "Now, we are going to have a second meeting. If anyone must go, won't you just slip out while we are seen?" I would put it as though I expected no one to go. Do you believe it to be a good thing to use a stereopticon on Sunday night? Stereopticon. I wouldn't do it because every Sunday night I would hold an after meeting for inquirers, and I couldn't do that very well after a stereopticon lecture. Those lectures would do very well on a weeknight, but Sunday evening I hold sacred to proclaiming the gospel in all its simplicity and following with an after meeting. Question: how can a minister have special meetings when he has failed to get an evangelist? Answer: there is a plan that is working very well in England and in some parts of this country. Let a minister who has special evangelistic gifts give 2 weeks to a brother minister and let that brother minister preach for him the Sunday between. Then that minister has 2 weeks in which he can go all through his parish and invite people out that perhaps he wouldn't like to ask to come to hear himself. He can get his whole church to work in the same way. Then if people are converted, the church members will be more likely to look after them than if there had been some great union meeting. That plan helps the minister who has been preaching too. He goes back to his own church all on fire and preaches to his people with new interest. A series of meetings is a good thing, because if a man is awakened on Sunday, and there is to be a meeting on Monday, he is likely to come, and the impression is deepened. On Tuesday it grows deeper, and Wednesday or Thursday he will attend the after meeting. I think if that could be done, many a church would double its memberships right off. It is perfectly feasible. Let a minister go away for 10 days and preach the best sermons he has. He has nothing to do but to pray, meditate, and study while the other minister with his members is out gathering the people. Question. Would you advise a young man to go into the ministry? Answer. Never. If God calls a man, all right, but I have seen too many man-made ministers. If a man is called by God, he will succeed. But if he is sent by man, he will fail. I should advise every man to engage in Christian work, but not to give up all other occupations and live by the pulpit. All are called to be disciples and witnesses, but there needs to be a special call to be an apostle. Question. Is it a good thing for a minister to study elocution? Elocution. Answer. Yes and no. It is a good thing to learn to read well. But when it comes to modern elocution, these studied gestures in the pulpit, my word, I am tired and sick of them. Some men remind me of a windmill with their practiced gestures. How would Moses have succeeded if he had gone down to Egypt and tried elocution of Pharaoh? I like the orators that moves men, but I have no use for the elocution where a man is showing off. Question. What would you do if you were a pastor in a town where there are 5 churches and only room for one? Answer. Get out mighty quick. No power on earth can make me believe it is God's will that a Methodist and a Baptist and a Congregational and a Presbyterian and an Episcopal church should be in one town where there is not room for more than one or two. There is scarcely any difference in their creeds, and it is a waste of time to be preaching in such a town. I believe that sort of thing is the work of the devil. Question. What would you do in a neighborhood of about 100 families and no church, where there are no Christians except one godly family? Answer. One godly family can evangelize 100 families very easily. Let any man or woman who can read well get a good sermon by some prominent man, and let it be announced that this sermon is to be read on Sunday morning or evening. Then get the people together and read that sermon and pray that God may bless it. It may be just as effective as the original sermon. That has been done all through the mining districts. It is a sight in Colorado on Sunday to see the miners coming out of the bowels of the hills and gather in the schoolhouse or under trees while some old English miner stands up and reads one of Charles Spurgeon's sermons. They have conversions right along. Question. How can we get hold of strangers in these great cities? Answer. I believe that if you would have in the pew a blank card with a place for name and residence, and if the minister would say when strangers are present that he or his wife would be glad to visit them if they would write their name and address in the card and leave it in the pew, I believe that if a minister would do that constantly, he would reach a great many people and bring them into the church. In all the cities, a great many people are lonesome or homesick and want sympathy, but they don't know how to get it. I heard of a man who went to a church for 6 months without a single person speaking to him. Of course, he was as much to blame as the church, but one morning the minister preached on recognizing friends in heaven, and as the man went out, he asked the sectan to ask the minister if he wouldn't preach on recognizing friends on earth, for he had been attending his church half a year, and no one had spoken to him. It would be a good thing to have a committee at the door and let no stranger get out without a word of welcome. Question. If you are advertised to preach and there is a small audience on account of bad weather, is it best to turn it into a prayer meeting? Answer. No, sir. I don't think so at all. If I expected 5,000 people there and found only 5, I would give them the best I could. Another thing, don't abuse the people who come for those that don't come. A rainy, stormy night is the time I expect the greatest blessing, because people have made a sacrifice to come. I was advertised to speak in Boston, and 3,000 tickets have been given out. There came up the biggest blizzard they had had in Boston for 8 or 9 years. I had worked hard to get to the city, and there I had to plow my way through deep snowdrifts. Less than 100 people were in that big hall, and the leaders wanted to know if it would not be best to close the meeting and wait until the storm was over. No, I said, not by a good deal. I never preached so hard in my life as I did to that 100 people. I put half a dozen sermons together and threw them right at them. If a man plowed through the snow to hear me, I ought to do my best to pay him for coming. What we want is to turn defeat into victory. If a man can't do that, he is a failure. Question. Ought a man to be admitted into the church if he has not been regenerated? Answer. No. You hurt the church and you hurt the man. A great many churches think that by admitting a man, you bring him under good influences that may lead to his conversion. But they find it leads to just the reverse. He gets settled in his self-righteousness, and it grows harder and harder to reach him. The moment you begin to talk to him, he runs up his lightning rod. Oh, I am saved. I am a member of the church. There he sticks. Question. Is it right for any man or woman who has not been converted or to have anything to do with an evangelical church? Answer. I never set an unconverted man or woman to work, but Christian men need to be warmed up and then set to work to convert those who are not Christians. Question. Would you tell a man who is speaking injuries a meeting not to take part in the prayer meeting? Answer. Yes, mighty quick. I would rather hurt the man's feelings than hurt the whole meeting. Some time ago I said to a man, you ought not to have said what you did tonight, and besides, your record is all bad, and you ought not to take part at all. Sir, he said, you hurt my feelings. Well, I said, you hurt mine. I have feelings as well as you, and you hurt the feelings of 500 other people besides. Question. What would you do if members in your congregation are at sword's point with others and won't make up? Answer. I should keep at them until they did make up or left the church. No blessing can be expected to come to a church as long as the members go to the Lord's Supper and have an open quarrel. I believe the reason that there are so few conversions in many churches is because of the church feuds. God isn't going to bless the church in that condition. Question. What can be done to influence young men in the church and Sunday school who are not Christians? Answer. It depends altogether on what class of young men they are. It may be wise to begin by gathering them together for a social time. Ask them to your house to tea. Get acquainted with them. Find out something that they can do, something they would like to do. Another good way is to visit them personally. Men like to be treated as men. They like to have a man take an interest in them. If a minister calls on men in their office or store or on the farm, they will usually manage to go to hear him preach. Question. How can a man who wants to preach overcome nervousness? Answer. That is a practical question, my friend. Do you remember the first time you got up to preach and how your knees went thump thump? I'll tell you what to do. Get so full of your subject that you forget yourself. Be occupied with the subject and you are all right. This opens the question of preaching. Let me say right here what I like to say, to speak better than to preach. Because if I can only get people to think I am talking with them and not preaching, it is so much easier to hold their attention. The other night, I was walking home in the dark and two people right behind me were talking about the meeting. One of them said, did Moody preach tonight? The other said, no, he didn't preach, he only talked. Did you ever hear him before? Yes. How do you like him? Well, we don't like him. He never has the church service, and he doesn't have any on any robes. And then his preaching, well, he doesn't preach at all, he just talks. I thought that was quite a compliment. I am glad if I can make people think I am talking with them. I think sometimes we almost preach the people to death. It is preach, preach, preach. If you can get the idea out of their minds that you are going to preach and just let them think that you are going to talk, you are more likely to reach them. Another thing, be yourself. I detest the kind of people that take a religious tone when they begin to talk to you on the subject of religion and have a peculiar whine that makes you think of cant. Be natural. Talk on the subject as you would any other. Question. How can a young man hold the people's attention? Answer. Get hold of their curiosity. If you take up Dr. Guthrie's sermons, you will find that he begins 1,000 miles away from his text, apparently, and you wonder how he's ever going to get back to the theme. When he has the curiosity of the congregation excited, he comes back to the text. You will find he almost invariably begins in that way. Another point, if you have got a good thing to say, say it in the beginning. Don't get into ruts. Strike out a path on your own. Don't say firstly and secondly and thirdly and then finally, in conclusion and lastly and all that. Take the whole truth and the whole text and throw it right at them. Then try to drive it home. It is said of Cicero, the great Roman orator, that when he had spoken, every one would go out of the building saying, what a magnificent address, what an orator. But when Demosthenes, the Greek orator, had finished, people would say, "Let us go and find Philip." He had fired them up with the cause, and what we want is to get the attention of the people away from ourselves and onto the subject. Question. Suppose you see a man asleep in the audience. Answer. It is a good thing to stop and say, "Won't you open the window and let in a little air? Here is a gentleman who has gone to sleep." That'll wake up every one of them. You can't reach a man when he is asleep. Men may talk in their sleep, but you can't talk to a man when he is asleep. An interruption like that won't do any harm, especially if it makes the people think it wasn't your preaching but the bad air that put the man to sleep. Very often you will wake a man up by pointing right down to him. Sometimes I have seen a man just going to sleep, and I would stomp my foot. One man asleep will publish to the whole audience that you are a dry preacher. Question. How long should a sermon be? Answer. It is very much better to get a reputation for being brief than to have people say that you preach long sermons. Say what you have got to say in just as few words as you can. Then stop when you get through. Some men go on and feel around for a good stopping place. I'd rather stop abruptly than do that. Don't waste any time. Remember, we are living in an intense age. Men think quicker than they used to. The time was when if a man wanted to do a little business in Boston, he would write half a dozen sheets of foolscap and send them by mail. Now he puts it all in a telegram of 10 words. What we want in our preaching is to condense. Get a reputation for being short, and people will want to hear you. Question. What would you do if the choir disturbed you? Answer. I remember preaching once at Limerick when our hymn books were new. A young man came in and joined the choir. There were 300 or 400 people on the stage, and he took a front seat. He took up a hymn book just as I began to preach and turned over the leaves. Beginning with the first hymn, he went on as if he were going to examine every page of the book. I thought to myself, have I got to preach until he gets all through that book before I can get the attention of my people? What to do, I didn't know. Finally, I used him as an illustration. Speaking of a young man in America, I said, he was about the age of this young man reading the hymn book. The result was that when I asked all those in the house who wanted us to pray for them to rise, he rose. That young man, was the first soul God gave me in Lambert. If he had gone on reading the hymn book, it would have been almost impossible for me to get a hold of him or the people. Get the attention of the audience somehow. If you're going to be a public speaker, train yourself for that. Question. What should be done after the attention is gained? Answer. Aim at the heart. Just keep thundering away at the man's heart, and you will get it. And if you get his heart, you will get his head and his feet and everything. You get the whole man. The story of the prodigal son will melt any man's heart. So will the story of the Good Samaritan. Or take any of the miracles of healing. How Christ saw a man blind or paralyzed and came to him and had compassion on him. Just open the heart of Christ to the people and draw the multitude around him. If you want to get a hold of the audience, aim at the heart, and there is nothing that will warm up the heart like the gospel of Jesus Christ.